And it's good to have George teaching our class this morning, and I appreciate those who filled in for me while I was on vacation. And then, of course, Mike Armour was here last Sunday, so I kind of feel a little kind of awed after being out of the pulpit for 3 weeks. This next week, beginning tomorrow, and going through Thursday, I'll be traveling to Yamhill for the Expositors Seminar. And Georges is going to that, and Ronnie will be filling in for me next Sunday. So I appreciate you kind of giving me some freedom here to do this, and I try not to take advantage of that. But sometimes it just works out that way. Mike Armour spoke here with us last week, Saturday, as well as on Sunday. And one of the things that he mentioned was the fall of the Soviet Union, the one the wall came down and the Soviet Union itself collapsed. And they realized that, of course, they had been restricting biblical teaching in regards to values in the old Soviet Union. And realizing that, they wanted to be sure to have good values, appropriate values for their country and their nation, so they're beginning to bring Bibles in and teaching them in the schools and so on and so forth, because they recognize that the need for appropriate values must be set in before you can really have a free nation. I just wished America would get that message. I'm not too sure we're too good at seeing some of these things, but be that as it may, we're living in a time when people are advocating that the parents of children should surrender their kids to the government for proper training and teaching. If you doubt that, listen to this quote taken from Melissa Harris Perry, a commentator or whatever she calls herself on CNN. She says, "We have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, and recognize that kids belong to their communities. This isn't about me taking your kids. This is about whether we as a society expressing our collective will through our public institutions, including our government, have a right to impinge on individual freedoms in order to advance a common good. And that is exactly the fight that we've been having for a couple hundred years." Who would have ever thought that someone would suggest that we surrender our kids to the government to bring them up? You may recall somebody saying it takes a village. But quite frankly, Bill Cosby has something to say about that. He says it takes a village, but the village has got a bunch of idiots. Well, we need to understand that God has given the responsibility of children to the parents. Our children have so much thrown at them that it has created a frightening environment. Let me just pop a picture up here for you. You know what that is? It's called the brick. 1971, I believe it was, or 76. I'm not for sure. I had the date written down. 1971 was the invention of the cell phone. And that's what the first cell phone looked like. Can you imagine packing that around in your pocket? Or putting it in your purse? And I wonder how many false calls you'd make with that one. There you go. Now you compare that to the cell phone that you now carry in your pockets. It's about a 3x5 if it's that big. Mind you, these could make phone calls, but they can't do anything compared to what telephones are doing today. In fact, you can do just about anything with a cell phone that you could do with a computer. It's just phenomenal how things have changed. Now, mind you, this all took place in one short generation. And those changes continue to go forward. Values are being challenged from every direction, from TV to music to peers to global interests. Just recently, we had another school shooting. And that ought to disturb all of us that these things are happening. The problem and the frustration comes when we try to label the problem or try to focus the problem on something like gun control. Would it surprise you to know that when I was in junior high, we had a gun club? And would it surprise you to know that those that were a part of the gun club had guns in their lockers? And not only did they have guns in their lockers, they had ammunition in their lockers. And of all things, nobody got shot. Now, why was that? Why was it that nobody got shot? Simply because we had respect for human life. Recently, in a hearing in the Florida legislature, a woman advocated that when a child is aborted, and that child is alive, is aborted alive, that it ought to be up to the decision of the mother as to whether or not that child should be provided life care, or it would be allowed to die. It's shocking to hear the things that sometimes people advocate in regards to our children and to dealing with children. We're confronted with confusion because we have no idea how to raise our kids, and we feel helpless against tremendous odds. We want help. We don't know where to turn to find it. I don't intend to be simplistic. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you I've got all the answers. But I do know this much. When I raised my kids, I made a lot of mistakes. I made a bunch of mistakes. And the reason is I didn't have any experience at it. Isn't it interesting that God gives children to people who have no experience raising children? And so is it any wonder that we as parents, or as the parents of today's generation, are struggling? And all I've got to say to you that are struggling, welcome to the crowd. Because we've all been there. But let me also say this, that Paul addresses the issue head on. Paul meets this problem directly in a very few words. Now, we look at this and we say, well, that's just, you know, you really can't take that and say that's the way to do it. Well, if not, then it's simply because of the fact you think that you probably know more than God does, because God told Paul what to write. Now, if this book doesn't give us the answers, then we don't have any answers. Okay? So let me just take Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 4, which is our next. But we've been going through Ephesians. We've just had a three-week hiatus. And I don't know where Ronnie's going to go next week. But in this particular letter, he begins chapter 6, verse 1, and he simply says, children, obey your parents. Now, when you think about that, you know, he doesn't mince words. He doesn't give excuses. He doesn't do all of these other things that we find ourselves oftentimes doing. He just simply says, children, you obey your parents. And the question that comes to mind is this. Were there disobedient children in the church at Ephesus? Apparently so, because he doesn't write something just to be filling up space. Paul doesn't write something just because he got something he wants to say, and even though it may not fit the situation, I'm going to say it anyway. No, I think there were some people in Ephesus that had some children that were a little bit unruly. And so Paul goes to the issue and he says, children, obey your parents. And so from this text, we can conclude some things. We can conclude, first of all, that they understand, the children understand what Paul is saying. Those children were capable of knowing what Paul was writing. The letter was written to the whole community of believers. The church came together. And the church, as it came together, receives this letter from Paul, and they began to sit down and read the letter to the whole church as it was gathered there. And the children were all there. Let me tell you something. Children's worship and children's classes are up their own name. That's not something Paul knew anything about. In fact, he would probably be somewhat shocked to come to our modern-day churches and find children sitting in Bible class and then getting up and going home. That just wouldn't fit. And so he sits there and he says, okay, you children, you obey your parents. There's no ambiguity, no side issues. There's an expectation that the children would follow through with the things that he's talking about. And the things that Paul had said there, children, obey your parents, that same instruction is for today's church. This morning, as George was opening up the book of James to us, he gave us the historical context and how that we need to keep things in the historical context. And that's certainly something that you need to do here. But that historical context also says that you've got to take that message and bring it to the today's world. And when Paul says, children, you obey your parents, that is still true. You still follow through with that. Children are still to obey their parents. Raising children begins with teaching children to obey. Now, there should never be any abuse. And God help the man who abuses a child or a mother that abuses a child. Child abuse was never acceptable. And I'll talk about that for just a little bit in a moment. But God does expect children to obey their parents. And we as a church, as a community of believers, need to encourage parents to teach their children to be obedient. We can also conclude that they are accountable. In a world where accountability is absent, it is refreshing to see God holds even children accountable. They are accountable. I'm convinced children want restraints. Children need restraints, but they also, I think, they want boundaries. Because boundaries keeps them from getting into trouble. Boundaries allows them to say no to things that they know would get them into trouble. And so they would like to have those boundaries. Now, I know that children are influenced by their surroundings. Still, behavior is inappropriate, is not to be overlooked. You just don't overlook that kind of thing. You remember the movie The Miracle Worker? The movie of Helen Keller. She was deaf and she was blind and she couldn't speak. And the parents were at their wits' ends trying to how to deal with her and what have you. Mind you, I saw this a long time ago, but I remember some things about it. And so they get Ann Sullivan. Ann Sullivan comes to work with Helen Keller. By the way, that name, Miracle Worker, that's Ann Sullivan. And that name was given to her by Mark Twain. But when she came into the house and she began to work with Helen Keller, one of the first things that she did, she refused to accept behavior that was inexcusable. She understood she couldn't see, she understood she couldn't hear, she understood she couldn't speak, but that was no excuse for behavior that was inappropriate. And what I'm saying is, it's one thing to understand why a child does what a child does, it's another thing to accept it. They still need to be said, still need to be told, that is unacceptable. That is inappropriate. We will not have that kind of behavior. You will not be allowed to do that kind of thing. And so we need to understand the difference between those sort of things and look and recognize the fact that children need to be held accountable just as adults need to be held accountable. We need to stop excusing behavior and beginning to recognize these things are something that needs to be dealt with. We can also conclude that this is a Christian family. Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Throughout the text, from chapter 5, verse 18 through chapter 6, verse 9, you're dealing with the Christian community. That's the only ones that are hearing this letter, by the way. There's nobody outside of the church community that's hearing this letter. The only ones that are hearing it are those that are in the community. It's a faith and spirit-filled relationships. God loves children. Jesus showed unequivocally that he loved children. He wanted children to be able to come to him and have free access to him. And there's nothing that invokes the wrath of God quicker than mistreatment of the helpless and the defenseless. If you read the book of Jeremiah, and you see the children of Israel being told that they're going off into Babylonian captivity, and he makes a list of about half a dozen things as the reason why they're going off into captivity, besides idolatry and this kind of thing, one of the things that's mentioned is the treatment of the helpless and the defenseless, specifically the widows and the children. Because God does not tolerate that kind of conduct. In a family that is committed to God, children must have an obedient spirit. And we can know that this is right. Children obey because it is right. It's just the right thing to do. You know, there's some things we do because it's the right thing to do. We tell the truth because it's the right thing to do. We are kind to one another because it's the right thing to do. We treat one another with respect because it's the right thing to do. Children, obey your parents because it's the right thing to do. You do it because it's right. There are some things that are difficult for us in our world. But there's also an order of things. And that order of things is that the parents bring the children into the world. Children obey the parents. One of the things that you learned if you watch some of these TV programs that focuses on animals, there are times when I've concluded that the animals are smarter than the humans. That the animals not only don't accept inappropriate behavior, but they punish. Animals also are focused on their children. They let them play. But trust me, that mama bear knows exactly where every cub is. And it knows exactly what every cub is doing. And so I kind of wonder, you know, we say, well, we're not, you know, we're more sophisticated. I'm not so sure much anymore. Children are to honor their parents. You know, one thing I'm struggling with right now, and I'm just going to have to confess this to you right now, I'm going to stop right here. And the thing I'm confessing to you is, you know, I got some new hearing aids. I can now hear in my left ear, and I've never been able to hear. And I don't know how I sound. Right now, I feel like I'm shouting because both ears are hearing everything. And I'm thinking, you know, back up from the microphone. The only problem is the microphone's backing up with me. So be patient with me as I try to get this adjustment. And there's no adjustment to be made except for my mind and my ability to deal with this. So this is something that is just making me very nervous here. So I'm trying to preach and deal with this at the same time. And I may not be doing a very good job of it, but just be patient with me. You want me to speak louder? I couldn't handle it. So children to obey the parents. Children are to honor their parents. Paul goes back to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12 at Mount Sinai, where the law was given, where the Ten Commandments were given. Honor of parents is an ancient practice. It's an ancient practice that preceded Mount Sinai. In other words, it didn't become a commandment to honor your parents, your mother and your father, at Mount Sinai. That's where the law was. That's where the law was given. But it was practiced hundreds of years before then. And it was something that, it's like the Sabbath. We think the Sabbath was given at Mount Sinai. Well, no, it was given there at Mount Sinai, but the Sabbath was really being observed long before then. So we look at this and we think, well, now we have this commandment, but it's always been that way. God put it in stone. Commandment number 5. And did you notice that commandments 1 through 4 deal with God? 5 through 10 deal with relationships. And the first one deals with parents and children. That's the first one that deals with relationships. There's nothing more disturbing than to see a child show disrespect to their parents. In fact, I see that and I just kind of cringe. And I thought, why? Do you understand what you're doing? Do you realize what you've just done? Honor implies elevation or esteeming. We elevate those who are responsible for us and who love us. We esteem them highly. We hold them up to be precious people. We want to so live that we make them proud of who and what we are. And it's important that we continue holding them up and showing them the preciousness that they are, in spite of the fact that we have our own families. And we have our own relationships outside of the immediate family. I look at mom and dad when the kids are grown and go off with their own families. I look at mom and dad as kind of being an anchor. This is the place where you come back to. This is where your roots are. This is where everything started, and you can always come back to it. And I think that's what parents are about. I think that's what parenting is about. And I think that's what it is in a relationship to being honoring. Honoring parents brings blessings. Notice how Paul puts it. The first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you live long on the earth. Now, this promise initially was for the children of Israel as they went into the land that we call the Promised Land. But it nonetheless has a present-day application, and that's what Paul's giving it. It's a present-day application, so it may be well with you. You know, I've never known a child who honored their parents who ever regretted it. They never did. And those who did oftentimes found themselves struggling with life. Long life is not measured by quantity, but by quality. That you may live long on the earth. It has more to do with the quality of life. Honoring parents knows no limitations. I look at this sometimes and I wonder. In other words, it does not end at you starting your family. How many parents have been left lying in a nursing home bed simply because the children just didn't want to be bothered? And I always hear this thing. Well, you know, we put them here because we cannot give them the care that they really need. And you know what the nursing home says? We cannot give your parent what only you can give. You know, parents want to be with their kids. Not 24/7 necessarily, but they want to see them. They like being around them. They like being close to them. They want to be able to know that, you know what, you mean something to us. I used to read this one church paper, and it had a cartoon in it called Theophilus. And in this cartoon strip of Theophilus, we see the first frame is a picture of Theophilus and his dad and his grandfather in the car driving off. And the next one says, as Theophilus asking his dad, he said, "Dad, where are we taking Grandpa?" And he said, "Well, we're taking him to the nursing home." And the next frame says, "Well, why are we taking him to the nursing home?" "Well, son, we're taking him to the nursing home because this is where he can get all the care that he needs, and he'll be comfortable, have his own bed, and they'll be able to look after him, and this sort of thing." And the next picture says, "Well, Dad, is this what we're going to do with you when you get old?" The final frame sees the car doing a U-turn. Heading back. I'm not suggesting that parents ought not to be placed in a place where they can receive care, but you don't forget them. That's unconscionable. That's almost unforgivable. That you can't look after your parents. You know, and I don't know. I may be wrong about it. I think in America is the only place that's got nursing homes. In all the other countries. And they do this. You know, and even in America, you know the Amish? The Amish have what they call the Dowdy House. The Dowdy House is attached to the main house. And the people that live in the main house are the father and the mother. They have their kids. Their kids grow up and they have their family. Now the mom and dad are the grandparents, so they move now to the Dottie house while their kids move into the main house. But the Dottie house is always connected to the main house. In the main house, those who are in the main house make sure they take care of those that are in the other house. If you know anything about Amish, they're very family-oriented and they have no use for government or all of that other stuff. You would never find an Amish in a nursing home. They have less to take care of their family than we do. And yet, they do it. Maybe it just doesn't take so much to take care of our loved ones as we think it does. Children are to learn from their fathers. Verse 4, Paul looks to the father to be the one who teaches the children. And like I said, I made a whole bunch of mistakes. Still make them, in fact, at times. But Gandhi and Tammy are out of the house, so the mistakes I make are not so prevalent. But let me just make some suggestions. First of all, be available to them. There are times when I am sitting in my study and I'm so intense on sermon preparation, feeling so like I want to get this thing out. I tell Karen, you know, I really need to, I need to get my focus here. I need to stay here on this. And I really, you know, unless it's important, you know, I just assume that you take the phone calls and I'll call them back. Well, and Karen's phenomenal about that. But Karen also knows there's one other thing here. And that is that there are some people who have unfettered access to me. And that's my family. When my family calls, I pick up. There's nothing that I am doing that is so important that my family cannot take precedence. And sometimes it's a little humorous as to what I'm being asked to do, but it's coming from my family. And I kind of look at that as, these are one of my memories I'm always going to have. And so I do that. Warren Wiersbe, in his little work on Ephesians, stated once that he went to a college, Christian college, to speak after he was done. And he made this speech. He said that, you know, I guess I'm not the only preacher that does this, because Warren Wiersbe does too. But Warren Wiersbe has a secretary, and he told his secretary, he said, now here's my list of people, but these people always have access to me, so that's okay. You let them come in. And he had this to say. He says, the top of this list is my family. Even if the matter seems to me inconsequential, I want my family to know that I am available. Shortly after the service, this message that he delivered, a student came up to him and he said, and the student said, I don't know if it's male or female, said, would you adopt me? I can never get through to my father and I need his encouragement so much. I got to tell you something. When your child needs you, nothing is more important. Not your job, not your hobby, not whatever it is you're in conversation. When your child needs you, they need you. So be available. Be an encouragement to them. Every child needs to know someone believes in them. And you're to be the one for your child to believe in them. Too many kids give up because they feel alone in a challenging and fearful environment. And I think about the fact that our schools have got one-third of our kids are dropping out of high school across the state. And what I heard the other day was that one-third is dropping out, and of the two-thirds that are left, half of them cannot read nor write. And that just strikes me as odd. I don't understand all of that. But I also know that our kids need to have a dream. They need to be able to have a vision of life outside of where they are and what they're doing at the moment. Have you ever sat down and heard and listened to your child tell you what their dream is? Have you ever sat down and asked your child, son, what is it that you want to do with life? When you get out of high school, what do you plan to do? Or you ask your daughter that. Sweetheart, what is your plans for life once you get out of school here? And who knows, you know, depending on their age, they may say one of the most crazy thing you ever heard of in your life. I'm going to be a brain surgeon. Or, I'm going to be the President of the United States. For crying out loud, don't say, well, you might as well forget that because that'll never happen. That's so destructive. Why not say, hey, that's a great dream. Tell me, how can we work to make this thing happen? And let them dream. It doesn't matter how crazy the dream or how great the dream or how unrealistic the dream. It doesn't matter. Let them dream. We've got a generation coming up that doesn't know how to dream anymore. They have no goals. They have no sense of future. They have nothing beyond where they are right now. For crying out loud, let's let our kids dream. Let them be children as long as they can be children, and let them dream, and let them dream the craziest dreams they've ever thought about. And then you encourage them at some point in their life, if that dream does not become a reality, that at least help them to be somewhat flexible enough to make whatever changes are necessary. But you encourage them. You be there for them. So that when you die, your child can stand at that funeral podium and say, "My dad always believed in me." Now you tell me what dad wouldn't like to have that said about them. "My dad always believed in me." We need to be an example to them. Children learn from what they see, and I'm finding that out more and more and more. There are times when I think I'd like to go up to the teen class and just set the Bible aside and say, "Okay, tell me what's going on. Tell me what's happening. Tell me what you've been seeing. Tell me what you've been learning. Tell me what you've been witnessing." I got an idea. You'll learn some things. You'll think it's one way, but by the time you walk out of that classroom, you're going to have a totally different take on the way things really are. Because they see things that you don't see. But adults also learn by an example. So it's not just children. God holds us accountable for how we present Him before our children. We need to teach our children about God. We need to treat our children in such a way so that they have a positive view of God as Father. Let that word Father be a word that is very endearing to them. Let it be a word that they treasure. Because then when it comes to talking to their Heavenly Father, that'll be a real communication. And I want to encourage you to talk about God to your kids. Turn back with me to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Words that were given by Moses to the children of Israel prior to their going into the land of Canaan. Well, prior to his death, actually. Listen to what Moses said to the gathered nation. "These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and your children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and his commandments that I give you, so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. You get the impression that Moses is telling the fathers, you teach your children about God. Be an example to your children about God. And which brings me to the last point, be a teacher to them. Make it a deliberate act. Set aside time. Listen, and I want to be just as clear as I know how to be here. If you are too busy to teach your children about God, you're too busy. And your priorities are out of whack. And you need to get it straight. Because God has given you that responsibility. He did not give it to the youth ministers. Didn't even give it to the church. He gave it to you. But you need to be a student as well. And you need to be a protector against that which is assaulting your kids. Be the teacher. Be the protector. Be a student. The family relationship is essential to a healthy nation and a healthy church. But we must be proactive, because being passive is unacceptable. Children, obey your parents. Parents, get involved in your child's education and get involved in their welfare. Get involved in their activities. Get involved with their friendships. Get involved with their religious teachings. You take responsibility. You be the one to be proactive. And if you've never done it, trust me, it's going to be hard for you to get started. But you need to persist. You need to stay with it. Because your children's eternal welfare lies in the balance. I don't know where you are this morning. Maybe you're a parent that's frustrated and trying to figure out a way to help your kids. I'll tell you, we want to pray with you and for you. We've been praying for the parents of our kids. We've been praying for the kids, and we're going to keep on doing that, because, quite frankly, in a world such as what we live in today, God needs to be involved. But if there's some way we can assist you, if you're not a child of God, want to put Jesus on in baptism, the opportunity is given to you this morning. I pray that whatever your need is, if you would come while we stand and sing.